Okay. So one of the, Jevchina and I both agree on this, that one of the best things about putting our shiurim on Wayuterah is every so often you get somebody from who knows where. Sometimes Australia. I think this guy lives in Israel, actually. Who email you and tell you, you know, you miss something big, right? And also then you find out who's been listening for years. He's like, I've been listening for years, but this time I have something to say. I'm like, okay. Sometimes people have questions. Sometimes they have comments. This person named Yaakov Safier. Like I said, this is the first email I've gotten from him, but I told him that it was a very good point, and now I have to give a second one because let's just set words where we were last week. So we discussed last week the problems of the biblical population explosion. And there's really two different problems, right? One problem is how do we get from 70 to 600,000 men over the course of our stay in Mitzrayim? That's problem one. Problem two is assuming that we do have that many people. So then there's all set of secondary problems. You know, how did we travel that fast? Why did Hashem assume we were a small nation? Why did he not want us to be able to settle land right away? All those problems. So that second set of problems, I don't have a new solution to. But the first set of issues is where there really is a whole nother approach to the issue. So it comes down to the following, and we're going to do two approaches here. So to just right, the problem was basically is that we know that when the Jews go down to Mitzrayim, so they have 70 people. Of those 70 people, or as the Torah records, it's 70 people. Of those 70 people, first of all, most of them, or a good percentage of them, have already finished having children. You're including in that Yaakov and his wives, and the Shvatim aren't having necessarily more children. So even amongst the 70, you don't really mean 70, you mean however many you mean, 30, 40 who are having children. And from that point till Yetziat Mitzrayim, you get, 600,000 men. So let's say about 2 million people or so. So the first question we have to ask is, okay, well, how long were they actually in Mitzrayim? How long did this happen? If we want to figure out mathematically how likely this is and how did it happen, so we got to figure out how long they were there. So we tend to talk about it, and that's why I talked about it last week, because this is the position of Chazal, the position of Rashi, and of many of the Rishonim, that they were there for 210 years. But one of the biggest problems in the Yetziat Mitzrayim story is there's actually, the Torah never tells you they were there for 210 years. The Torah tells you either they were in Mitzrayim 430 years, or 400 years. Right? So you look at number one, at the summary pasuk after Yetziat Mitzrayim, the Torah actually tells you, "Moshav bnei Yisrael asher yeshuv b'Mitzrayim 30 shana v'arba me'ot shana." They were there for 430 years. Now, in the Brit Ben Tarim, so then we hear it's going to be 400 years. So those are the sort of two numbers that we have: 400 and 430, explicitly in Chumash. So where do we get this notion that it's 210? Now, the truth is there's a lot of other positions. If you look, there's a whole list of positions. There are some who think we were there for 215, and there are some with, right? There's actually, like, a whole list. And if you go on alhataret.org, and you just go, like, the length of the actual, you'll see every position from, you know, from the classic sources to Qumran and Philo and Josephus, and everyone has 200, and Demetrius and whatever, from 210, 215, 400, 430, everyone has a different calculation of exactly how much it is. We're not going to try to get into the exact date, but let's say there are two basic positions, right? Either they're in the 200 range, right? Or they're in the 400 range, right? There are people who go at 350, but 200 to 400.
Is it 210, is there a position that's what they were slaves, but they might have been there longer?
So they try to even minimize it beyond that, right? That maybe they were, right, they were there for 210, but they were only slaves for 100, right? 100, whatever. But that's what we're going to try to see. Where did this notion come from? So if you already look at Targum Yonatan, who's, you'll see the same thing in Rashi, but in Targum Yonatan, so just background to the Targumim, normally, right, we have translations of, Aramaic translations of Torah and of Nach. On Torah, we have only one translation from Bavel, and that's Onkelos. Now, the unkelis, for the most part, is almost a literal translation. There's, like, comments here and there, and sometimes he waxes on midrashically. But for the most part, unkelis is a very straightforward translation into Aramaic. But the Targumei Eretz Yisrael, right, had a totally different genre, and they incorporated midrash liberally in the Targum. It wasn't a translation, it was a translation commentary. So since originally, when you would go to shul, they wouldn't just read the Torah, they would read the Torah plus the Targum, plus the translation. So in Bavel, the Jews were hearing basically a translation of the Torah into a language they understood. In Eretz Yisrael, they were hearing basically a rabbi giving drashot while they were talking. It was translation incorporated with drashot. So the only actually full Eretz Yisrael Targum we have is what's called now Neofiti, or Ketav Yad Romi, which was a recent Targum we found in the Vatican. Targum Yonatan, or what's called Yonatan, is not actually Yonatan Ben Uziel. We know that for sure, because Chazal tell you that he never wrote on Chumash. Chazal tell you he wrote on Navi, and not on Ketuvim, and not on Chumash, right? There's no indication he wrote on Chumash. It's probably just a mistake. It used to say Taf Yud, just Targum Yerushalmi, right? Targum from Eretz Yisrael, and then someone thought, oh, Targum Yonatan, that was a mistake. But the Targum Yonatan itself is actually a very eclectic Targum. It includes old material from Eretz Yisrael, from the Tannaitic period, but also includes medieval material, right? So like on the Pasuk with when Esav marries the daughters of Yishmael, the Targum Yonatan names them Fatima and whatever, which is like, you know, the wife and sister of Muhammad. So it's clearly, right, a much later thing. But anyways, but it collects midrashic material. So he translates the pasuk as follows. V'yomaya diativa b'nei Yisrael b'mitzrayim tlatin shmitin dishnin disuchmon matan v'eser shnin. And they were there for the dwelling of the sons of Israel in Mitzrayim were 30 weeks of years, meaning 30 times 7 years, which is the sum of 210 years. Right? So this is, I put this because, you know, it's one thing for Rashi to say it. It's another thing for a Targum to say it, right? 430, which means 210. So now he has to answer the question. Minayin arba me'e tlasin shnin, right? So what is 430 then? So it's since min demalel Hashem l'Avraham min shatam elil imei b'chameisar b'nisan b'nei pisugayat yom adin afakum mitzrayim. It's 430 years from when he first spoke to, since the Brit Ben Hamitarim, when he spoke to Avraham and told him, you're going to go to Mitzrayim. But that means they were only there, right, for 210 years. Now, where do we get the notion 210? Okay, so let's say you think it is 430 since the Brit Ben Hamitarim, or 400 from Ben Hamitarim. How would you know it's 210? So the number basically comes from the lives of Levis. You know what? I'll do this. I'll hold Rashi for a minute. Look, it comes from number 4 and 5. Part of the Brit Bin Mitarim, when Hashem promised Avram that his children would go down to, you know, would be strangers in a foreign land and eventually come back to Eretz Israel, he says, Dor Rivi'i Yashuvu Heina. The fourth generation will return here. Hilo Shalem Avon HaEmori Ad Heina. For the iniquity of the Emori is not yet complete, meaning it's not time for us to kick out the seven nations, but in four generations from when, which sounds like four generations from when they leave to when they return, you will come back. So Chazal, for the most part, follow and Rashi follows them, assume that Dor Revi'i means literally from when they go to Egypt till when they come back, it's going to be total four generations. Now, what four generations are there? So if you look in 5, yeah, it's the four generations from Levi that they calculate. V'ele shmot b'nei Levi l'tol dotam gershon u'kahad u'meri u'shnei chaye Levi sheva u'shloshim ma'ashana. So these are the sons of Levi. Now, Levi, three sons, Gershon, Kahad u'meri, and his life is 137 years. B'nei gershon Levi v'shim l'shchotam. So Gershon has Livni and Shimi. Uvne Kahat Amram v'Yizhar Chevron v'Uziel Shnei Chaye Kahat Shalosh u'Shloshim Matshana. Kahat has four sons, Amram, Yitzhar, Chevron, Uziel, and Kahat lives for 133 years. Nei Merari, Machli, Mushi, Elahem, Mishpachot, Alevi, L'toldotam. And then Merari has two sons, Machli and Mushi. Vayikach Amram, and now the four generations are going to be Levi to Moshe, because Moshe obviously leaves, so and Levi comes down, so four generations. So Levi's son is Kehat, right? Then Kehat Has, right, Amram, Yitzron Chevron Uziel. Amram is the father of Moshe. So, Vaikach Amram et Yocheved Dodato lo Liisha v'tilo Aharon v'et Moshe u'shnei chayei Amram sheva u'shloshim ma'atshana. And Amram marries his aunt Yocheved and has Aaron and Moshe. And Amram lives for, again, 137 years. V'nei Tzar Korach v'nefeg v'zichri v'nei Uziel Mishael, etc., etc. And then if you skip down just about Chavav, right, who Aaron and Moshe, Shamar Adonai, Lohem, Otsio, B'nai, Shomer, Atzraim, Altsevotam. And these are the Aaron and Moshe that we know that take us out of Egypt. So the assumption that Chazal work with, for the most part, is that four is four from Levi. So Levi, Kahat, Amram, Moshe, four generations, the fourth generation, Dor Revi'i, Moshe is the fourth generation, Yeshuvu Hina, will come back to Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Now, how long, therefore, were they in Egypt? So we take their age, and we right then we actually have the ages. And if you look at Rashi, in number three, so Rashi goes to the calculation. So he says, Bein HaKol, Mishanolad Yitzchak Arachshav Hayu Arbameot. So he said there's three times we have to deal with. 430, 400, and then how long they were in Egypt. So 430 is from the Brit Bein HaPtarim. 400, he assumes, right? So Chazal assume that the Brit Bein HaPtarim is when Avram is 70, and therefore Yitzchak is born when he's 100, which gets us to 430 from Brit Bein HaPtarim, 400 from the birth of Yitzchak, and then X number of years in Mitzrayim. So what's the number? So he says, this is the calculation. Bein HaKol Mishnol Yitzchak Ad Achshav Hayu Arba Meot. So 400 from the birth of Yitzchak. Mishahayel Ozer L'Avraham Nikayem Ki Ger Yezaracha. He said, why do we start counting when Yitzchak is born? Because the promise is your children will be strangers, so Yitzchak needs to be born. There needs to be a child. Okay, so that's why we wait 30 years. Ushloshim shana hayu mishenigzra gzeirat bein haptarim matshanol Yitzchak. So it's 30 years from when Yitzchak is, from the Brit Bein HaPtarim to Yitzchak's birth. V'yef shar lomar be'eretz Mitzrayim levada. It can't be that the 400 or 430 was in Mitzrayim. Sharei, and then he said, I'll prove it to you. Sharei kahat min abayim in Yaakov haya. Levi and kahat actually came down to Egypt. Tseva chashov kol shenotav v'chol shenot Amram b'no. Ushmonim shal Moshe. Now do the math. Right? Add Kahat's life to Amram's life to Moshe's life. Lo timtzeim kol kach. Even if they each given had a child only as they died, right? You wouldn't have enough years because Moshe is 80 when he leaves. Kahat is 133 when he dies, and Amram is 137 when he dies. So even if they didn't overlap in their life at all, you would be at 350. Right? 137 plus 133 plus 80. Right? So it would be at 350. So that would be if you actually, if they never overlapped. And that wouldn't get you even to 400. But he said, that's not even true. First of all, Kahat lived before he got to Egypt. So that already cuts off some years. And Amram lived for many years before Kahat dies. And Moshe lived for many years before Amram died. So you can never get to 400. So what you're going to have to say is that the period of being a stranger was even not just Egypt, was all the time they were in Israel, in the time of Yitzchak. So when it says you'll be a stranger, means from when you have children, you still aren't in your own land. So the 400s from Yitzchak is born, Reish Yud, and then you get 210 years. Now how 210? So Chazal, again, they don't know exactly how many it is, because you know it's less than 350, but they make a drush on the word redu, right, that you'll be down in Egypt, and they say the gematria of redu is 210, and that's where they get the notion of 210, but basically, the way that Chazal come up with that number, and again, I said Chazal have 210, others have 215, but whatever, the 200 range is basically saying that if you assume that Dor Revi'i Yeshuvu Hina means literally, the fourth generation will return. And that is Levi, Kahat, Amram, Moshe. And God is 133 when he dies, and Amram's 137, and Moshe is 80. So the maximum you could get, even if each of them had a child right when, you know, they were dying, you'd get to 350. And since that's not true, right, you've got to cut it down. And then they look for a number and they find a gematria, 210. That's where they come up with the notion that it's 210. And this is what creates the problem, is that, as we said, the big number problem is that we're assuming, like this, Dor Revi'i, Yeshuvu Hena, there are four generations in 210 years. So how do you get from 7 to, right, to the 2 million, 70 to the 2 million? Okay, so we suggested several solutions last week, but here is two much better solutions than anything I had last week, okay? And the first thing to see is that Dor Revi'i, Yeshuvu Hena. So we tend to think, well, Dor Revi'i Yeshuvu Hena, if, let's say, it was four generations from Levi to Moshe. So we tend to assume, okay, that means that it was four generations across the board, four or five generations, give or take, right? But what if that wasn't true? What if it wasn't true that the rest of the Jewish people only had four generations? Now, I could speculate, but the truth is that I know for a fact that it's not true. Because if you look at number 6 in Divrei Hayamim gives you the generations of every major personality in Chumash. And we find out that, well, let's look at it, right? This is the list. So Bnei Yehuda, I'll come back to that in a moment. Skip to 11. To Divrei Hayamim, this is the easiest way to see it. Look at number 11. Ubnei Ephraim. Let's try Ephraim. So what prominent person do we have from Ephraim who's going to go into Eretz Israel?
Yeshua.
What? 11.
Yeshua.
Right, last one on the second page, right? Yeah. Got it?
Nope.
Like Chronicles 7.
What's this? What's the footnote?
It's number 11.
Oh, number 11. Chronicles.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Right. Yes. Chapter 7. So Ephraim, right, goes down to, well, is in Egypt, right? And Yehoshua goes into Israel. So that's a very easy one. We know, right, that from Ephraim to Yehoshua is the period from Egypt to going to Eretz Israel. So how many generations are between Ephraim and Yehoshua? So we find out in Divrei Hayamim. Uvnei Ephraim. So Ephraim has Shutelach Uvered Beno, V'tachad Beno, V'lada Beno, V'tachad Beno. Vizeved Beno, Shutelach, well, you know, just, cause I can, so I can have it on the same page. Just look at the English, because it doesn't really matter, and I can see it all on the same page. Right? So sons of Ephraim, Shutelach, his son Bered, his son Tachad, his son Elada, his son Tachad, his son Zavad, his son Shutelach, Ezer and Elad, the men of God born, they killed them because they had gone down to take their cattle. Fine, Ephraim, their father, mourned many days, and their brothers came to comfort them. He was covered with his wife, who conceived and bore a son. She named him Biriah, because it occurred when it was misfortune in his house. His daughter was Shriah, who built lower and upper Beit Charon, and who's in Shira, his son Repha, Reshpa, his son Telach, and Tachan, his son Ladan, his son Amihud, his son Elishama, his son Nun, his son Yehoshua. So how many generations? Ephraim, right, to Repha, right, so it's Rephach, Reshef, Telach, Tachan, Ladan, Amihud, Elishama, Nun, Yehoshua, and I forgot Ephraim, right, so 10. 10 generations from Ephraim to Yehoshua, right? Simple. 10 generations. There were 10, right? So now we have, right, we have a different set of data here, right? When we do from Kehat to Moshe, so we from Kehat to Moshe, so sure, it's 4, right? Levi to Moshe, it's 4. But we know that, at least in Ephraim, it went through 10 generations in that time. So now, we have two possibilities. So, how long, then, were they in Mitzrayim? So, one possibility is to say, you know what? Why are we bending over backwards to say that the Jews were in Mitzrayim for 210 years? Because of Dor Revi'i Yeshuvu Hena, right? But wait a second. The Torah says they were there for 430 years. In Divrei Hayamim, we know that at least other Shvatim are going through 10 generations. So here's a solution. Say they were in Mitzrayim for exactly as many years as it says in Chumash. This is not like some, right, biblical critic, right? Just look at Chumash. How many years were they in Mitzrayim? How many generations does Tanakh say they were there? The answer is 10 and 430. The math suddenly becomes much simpler. So you look at 14, right? Shaddal says this. He says, Vayikach Amram, Al Karchenu Trichim Anu Lomar, Shishmin Hak. So, well, okay, one more problem, right? Which is, okay, well, how many. So let's say they were there for 430 years and there were 10 generations. We have a problem because Moshe still is fourth generation. There's no way that it's four generations over 430 years. We know that's impossible because we know how long they lived, right? And as we've already said, their whole life adds up to 350 if they didn't overlap. That's how Chazal knew they had to cut it down. So, what options do we have? If we're going to keep it at 430, so you're stuck. Unless you say that four doesn't mean four. Four means four important generations, and there were other people in between. Now, that seems very sketchy, except it's not at all sketchy, because that's actually how Tanakh works. So if you look in Haggai, right, look at number 12 and 13. This is the background to Shaddal, right? 12 and 13, look in Haggai. Vayishma Zerubbabel ben Shaltiel, v'Yoshua ben Yehotzadak, Hakohen Gadol v'chol she'irat ha'am b'kol Adonai Eloheihem v'al divrei Haggai Navi kasher shlacho Adonai Eloheihem v'yiru ha'am mipnei Adonai. So we meet this person named Zerubbabel, the son of Shaltiel. Okay? But look at divrei ha'yamim, at the same person. Uvnei Yechonya Asir Shaltiel b'no u'malkiram u'fidaya u'shnen sar yikamya Hoshama unedavia uvenei fedayah Zerubbabel v'shimi ben Zerubbabel mishulam Hanania u'shlomit achotam. And you find out that Zerubbabel is not Shaltiel's son. He's his grandson, right? He's the son of Pedaya, the son of Shaltiel. So Shaddal, we'll read it in just a moment, takes, but just to set up what he says, he takes two pieces of information and solves the problem. He says, well, wait a second. First of all, the Torah says 430 years. Second of all, Ephraim is 10 generations in Mitzrayim. So then you're going to tell me, but wait a second, Levi to Moshe is only four generations and they only live total 350 years. They can't be there 430 years. He said, that's not true. Because we see from Haggai and the Divrei Yamim, Tanakh doesn't always mention everybody. Sometimes someone will be called somebody's son, even if he's his grandson, because the father was irrelevant, wasn't an important person. So sometimes Tanakh just skips it. So he said, so who said it's four? Maybe it means four important generations. And maybe Levi also had six, seven, eight, 10 generations, just four important ones. Just like in Haggai, Zerubbabel is the son of Shaltiel, but in Divrei Yamim you find out that he's his grandson. So Shaddal 14, who Shaddal is a 19th century Italian scholar who's sort of off the beaten track. He always has interesting things to say. So this is his solution. He takes those pieces of information and he solves the problem. He says, okay, Vaykach Amram said, Al Karchenu, Trichem Anu Lomar, Shishmira Katu, Ktatarot, Bin Kahat Amram. It must be that we skipped some of the generations between Kahat and Amram. Why? He said, I'll prove it to you. I'm not just going to guess. Let me prove it to you. Right? 8,600. Right? He said, let me do even more fancy math for you. Right? You think it's problematic to say we went from 70 to 2 million. Watch this math. Kahat in Bamidbar, when you count the number of children Kahat has, there are 8,600 from Kahat. V'lohayu rak arba banim shemidu mishpachot. And he only had four sons. Hare lekola, and right, and there, this is, remember, his grandson's generation. Hare lekola chad me arba b'nei Kahat banim alpayim mea chamishim. By simple mathematics, right? If Kahat's grandson is Moshe, meaning that there's only two generations from Kahat to Moshe. Kahat has four children, and by the time you get to Bamidbar, there are 8,600 members of the family of Kahat. then that means that every one of them had to have 2,150 children, which is beyond any number that we saw, even in the wildest Midrashic calculation from 70 to 2 million, right? The numbers are actually impossible. And he said, and Amram, we know how many kids he had. He had three, right? Which means that the other three children need to make up the other, right? So only Moshe and Aaron are counted because it's a count of males. But still, so the other three sons need to make up the 8,598 children, right? Which, right? Moshe lo hidrak shnei bnei, right? Banim v'Aaron arba. And Moshe, we know, has two kids and Aaron has four. Ve'eich yitachen shiyu la'amrim v'chein li'itzhar l'chevron uziel. Right, so how are they all going to have, right, 2,150 kids? And that was the second year since they left Mitzrayim, right? This is not like happened over a long period of time. This is the second year we take the census, right? He's like, the math doesn't work out. This is actually how he writes it. I don't know who this is, but some academic scholar he quotes in some article in, I guess that's Italian. I'm assuming that's Italian. Shamar, he said, very simple. No, they weren't just four generations. There were other generations in the middle. It was 430, as the Torah says. And when it says Doravi Yeshuvuheno, it means the fourth important generation is gonna return. But you know what? There were other people in between, just like there are in Chagai and Divrei Yomim. Lufize Yuvan Otsem Ribui Bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim. And he said, now you don't have any problems. How do you get from 70 to 2 million? Shalom Ratar Shah Derech Neis Mamash. The Torah never said it was a miracle, or a major miracle, right? Vachacham Yost, right? Right, or Jost, or however you pronounce it, I think it's Yost, whatever, J-O-S-T, in English. Omer, ki ha-shemot ha-ila nizkarim kan hem shemot ha-mishpachot. So the names here aren't the names of every person, they're the names of the families. Right? Ki omar shekol zman she'av chai al rov hayu kol tzav laguda achad mishpacha achad. As long as the father was alive, so they called the whole family after him. Aval mishu lefamim hayu banim mitpardim b'chai avayhem when Yitzhak Yishmael b'chai Avram v'Yakov v'Yisav b'chai Yitzchak v'mora av hayta mishpacha nechleket lefamim kam achar mitar av lo hayta mitchaleket ad achar zman man. He said sometimes the family didn't divide, they stayed as a clan. And if they stayed as a clan, so you didn't have to rename the next generation. Right, so let's say you had a patriarch who lived for a very long time and everyone basically gathered around him. So when did you name the next generation? When his influence had died out. As long as his influence continued and people lived in his patriarchal, you know, group, so there was no reason to name a new leader, right, so to speak, a new patriarch of the family. And therefore, the name Ashmuda Parashazot Lufida Tohi Kimishbachat Levi Nishara Bitor Mishbacha Achad. We're going to shame Levi. Meshach Kuf Laim Zashanach. Raymond Yaakov. What it means is that Levi's family continued to be Levi's family for 137 years. And after that, eventually, there were three clans within Levi that divided. Gershom Kadamirari, Vechemishbachot Kahat, Amdala Gudachat Kuf Lamid Gimel Shanim, and then the Kahat clan was 133 years, right? It's not even their lifetime. Then there were four clans. The Amramite family had been the clan for 137 years. And Moshe and Aaron from that clan, he named Chaber Shlosha Misparim Eila Kuf Lamed Zayin, Kuf Lamed Gim, Kuf Lamed Zayin, Tosif Aleim, Zayin Shanash of Yisrael Mitzrayim, Kodem Mitat Yaakov, Yebiatcha Tov Kaf Dalit Shanim. So he said, if you add 130, right? So he then says, right, once you say this, you don't have to say that when the Torah says that Amram lived 130, right, 7 years, it means 137 years. It means the clan of Amram was a clan for 137 years, and the clan of Levi, right, was defined itself just as the Levite clan for 137 years, and Kahat for 133 years. So he said, yeah, so take 350. There were three periods in the Levite family, which together is 350 years, right? And then you get, right, he said he adds, right, 17 for the years they were there before, but really if you just add the 80 of Moshe, right, you'll get to what you want, but basically you get to about 430. And what it means is not literally four, it means there's four, you know, sort of Tkufot, four periods. There was the period when people still defined themselves as the Levites, and then they had divided into sub-clans. But really, how many generations were there? I don't know. If you take Divrei Yamim, let's say there were like 10 generations. So Shaddai solves the problem by saying, well, the answer is, take Chumash at its word, that we were there for 400 years. Look at Divrei Hayamim and say, how many generations were there? There were more than four. How do you deal with a problem that we only count four? Well, sometimes in Tanakh, you skip unimportant generations. You only name the people who got clans named after them. So they divided at Levi and at Kahat and at Amram and then at Moshe. You take that together. You get about 430 years. And if you're talking 430 years, you're talking 10 generations, right? So then you do the math, right? If you do the math, right, 10 generations is much more plausible, because how many children do you need to have to go from 70 to 2 million in 10 generations? Not that much. The answer is about 5 to 6, right? Right? 5 to 6 isn't so much. Now, Rav Yaakov Maidan wanted, accepted half of this and rejected half of this, right? He doesn't like Shaddal's move to claim that there were that we were there for 430 years. Because he said, look, the consensus of Chazal and most of the Rishonim was that the Jews weren't there for a full 430 years. But the truth is that you can get to this solution without extending it to 430 years. And he said, how? Well, he said, okay, forget the 430 years for a minute. Let's just take the what's irrefutable according to Divrei Hayamim. Divrei Hayamim said what's irrefutable is that there were 10 generations in Ephraim. Now think about it. 210 years, 10 generations, is not actually impossible if people are getting married in their teens, which people were getting married in their teens, right? So in 15, right, he says as follows, in order not to unnecessarily increase the Egyptian exile, and in order to maintain understanding the matter that accords with the sages, Rashi and the Ramban and the other early commentators, we must find a way to answer Shaddal's most relevant question. I believe that the key to this answer lies in the verse in Sefer Bereishit. So Rav Maidan wants to solve it with by saying there's more generations, but he adds one more piece of information, and that is the following. Yaakov says to Yosef, now your two sons who were born to me in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt, they are mine, right? Ephraim and Manasseh will be like me, Reuven and Shimon, right? Ephraim and Manasseh, Reuven and Shimon yihyu li. And whoever is born to you, whoever you bear after them, will be yours. They will be called after the name of their brethren in their inheritance. So it seems to me, so he said, okay, it seems to me, according to the literal text, that Yosef had more than two sons. This is what the verse is teaching us when it says, to Yosef were born two sons before the years of famine began, implying that later on more were born. And it is to these that Yaakov refers when he says, whom you bear after them. He said, right, what Yaakov actually says to Yosef is, Ephraim and Manasseh are shvatim, they're mine, and anybody born after, right, will be yours. Now, we tend to read that as, you know, Ephraim and Manasseh's children, because we assume he only had two children. But Rav Maidan said, why do you assume that that the Torah exhaustively lists every human being who existed in the Jewish people? That's not what he says. He said, these children are not listed in the genealogy of Yosef's sons because they join in the inheritance of their brothers, Manasseh and Ephraim. All Yaakov said is only Ephraim and Manasseh will become Shvatim. So what happens if you have other sons? They'll be assimilated into Ephraim and Manasseh. Similarly, and he said, I'll prove to you that this could be the case. He said, Tanakh lists 10 sons of King David, 6 in Hebron and 4 in Yerushalayim. But Chazal speak of him having 400 sons. Indeed, the verses hint at many more children, right? He has many wives, right? Hence, the names listed are only the heads of households, with these households numbering not only their sons, but also their less important brothers. It's also possible that many of the descendants of the tribes were killed or died all types of terrible deaths during the Egyptian subjugation, and their children joined the families of their father's brothers, just as the orphans Lot joined the family of Avram. According to this approach, too, only the main heads of households are listed, each representing hundreds and thousands of people, just as each person listed among those who returned from from Babylon withdrew Bavel represent hundreds or even thousands of family members. He said, I'll prove it to you that this could be the case, because in Ezra, you name the head of each family, right? The head of each clan, of each tribe, each group. We only hear the names of the heads. And then he said, let's prove it from one example. And this I gave you in the beginning. I did a little bit of that, or whatever. So let us examine one example, which may serve to strengthen our assumption. Yaakov went down to Egypt with 70 souls. His son went down, each with an average of 4 sons. And these sons, in turn, also had children. These children are the only ones mentioned in the census conducted in the 40th year in the desert. But clearly, our assumption cannot be that Yaakov's children stopped bearing children from the time they reached Egypt. When they went down to Egypt, they were still young, aged 40 or a little more, at their peak, compared to the age which Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov bore their children. He said, how old were the Shvatim? They were 40, they were in the 30, normal ages to still have children. Is it possible that the 39 Yosef had no more children, or Yehuda, age 43? And why should we assume that Peretz, who was a whole generation younger than his father, stopped having children after Chetzor and Chamul, who went down with him to Egypt, right? He was all of, what, 20 when he came down? Right? Why should he not? But if he did indeed bear more children, why are the families of these other children not listed in the census to those who inherit the land the 40th year? We're forced to include then that those born in Egypt are subsumed under the households of their brethren who went down to Egypt, and they join in their inheritance. So he just says, well, yeah, the simple addition to this, right? One solution is say people were getting married young and it was 10 generations. But the second part is simply, why do you assume that the lists in Torah are exhaustive? Right? There's no particular reason to assume that they are that they're exhaustive. Yeah, I gave you in 6 to ten. I gave you just the background to his, right? Yehuda, right? This is the discussion of the Yehuda, right? The Yehuda, as he talks about, right? B'nei Yehuda, Er v'onan v'sheilah, shloshan nolad lo, mi bat shua k'nanid, v'yer b'chor Yehuda, rab b'nei Hashem v'imiteyu, v'tamar chalatay yaldo lo et peretz v'etzerach v'kol b'nei Yehuda chamisha, b'nei feretz chetzron v'chamul, v'nei zerach zimri, v'eitan v'heman v'chol kol v'dera kulam chamisha, v'nei karmi, achar ocher Yisrael asher me'al cherem, v'nei etan azariah, v'nei chetzron shan lo lo yedrachmiel, v'ram et kluvi, v'ram olid et aminadah, v'aminav olid et nachshon, nasi v'nei Yehuda. Amongst Yehuda, again, how many generations do you have? You have Yehuda, right? Then you have Peretz and Zerach. Then Peretz has son of Chetzron and Chamul. And then you have the children of Chetzron, is Yerachmiel. Then Ram Gluli, V'Ram Holid et Aminadav. Aminadav Holid Nachshon, right? So in the case of Yehuda, it's 6 generations. I just proved, so in the next few psukim, how we get to this. I'm not going to get into all the details here, but Ramadan's basic point, right, is these people are, A, we know there's more generations. Yehuda also are 6 listed generations, but again, if you look at who's being listed, why do we assume that they were the only people who existed, right? These people were in their prime. It only says 2 generations, 2 people per generation, 3, 4. So there's no reason to assume that. Maybe these are only the people who become the heads of families. So now Ramadan says, okay, let's say you have up to 10 generations, even in 210 years, plus I'll even make it easier by assuming that the 70 people, right, or at least that first generation is not really just 70. There's a whole bunch of other people. These are just the named people. But already in the first generation, people are having a lot of children, right? There are 70 who come down to Mitzrayim, but it's not like then you have to count from the generation on. The people alive are still having children, and they're just not named. They get assimilated into the other families. So it's not 70 anymore. It's, let's say, a few hundred. And each of them has, in the case of Yehuda, 6 generations, gets of Ephraim, 10 generations. So how many people do you need? So again, he just looks at 16. Here's the numbers. We may explain Chazal's teaching that the women used to bear 6 at one time, right? He said, everyone understands the Midrash as having 6 tuplets. He said, why 6 tuplets? It never says that. It says, Sheish Bekeres Echad, 6 per womb. He said, why do you assume Chazal means 6 tuplets? Just say Chazal are doing simple math and saying approximately, if you have 10 generations and you need to get from 70-ish to 2 million, you need about 6 children per family. And he said, think about it. That's a miracle. Because, not because it's impossible a woman should have 6 children, but to say that this a nation of slaves over the course of 2 centuries, each family consistently bore 6 healthy children generation after generation, is not impossible, but it's also miraculous. It's also impressive. Right? He said, this does not mean that every woman used to bear, right, 6 tets. I don't know why he put that, but sextuplets, right? That would be an altogether unnatural phenomenon. What the teaching means is that every mother, meaning every belly, would bear 6 children in the course of her life. We may assume that on average, these 6 children would be 3 sons and 3 daughters, right, statistically. And this accords with the size of the family as noted in our Parsha. Right? Keeping in mind that only the sons are listed. He said, now look at our Parsha. Most people have 3 sons. Right? Everyone. Right? Has about 3 sons. 3-4 sons. He said, well, yeah, if everyone has sons, you only mention boys. And everyone mentioned has about 3-4 boys. That means there's probably about 6 children per family. It's simple math. Right? If you only mention men, right, and each generation of men has about three boys per family, then that means on average every family has 6. Where do you think Chazal got 6? It's about 6. And he said, now let's do the math. Let's attempt to calculate the numbers of Bnei Israel. Based on the assumption, the generation that went down to Egypt numbered 60 males who were still of childbearing age. The next generation would have numbered 180 males. Right? Meaning 3 males per generation. Third generation, 540. The fourth, 1620. The fifth, 4,860. The sixth, 14,580. The seventh, 43,760. The eighth, 131,280. The ninth, some 400,000. Assuming that the seventh, eighth, and ninth generations that left Egypt, after about 190 years, there were 600,000. After 200 years, all were aged 20. The miracle of the reproductive multiplicity in Egypt was therefore a hidden miracle, that despite the hardships of Egyptian subjugation, their persecution, women bore 6 children. This average did not waver up to the time of the Exodus. He said, 10 generations, it's easy. Not everyone had 10. Ephraim is a lot, right? You'd add 6, but let's say everyone had somewhere in between, right? So 6 to 10 generations, right? And an average of 6 children per family total, 3-4 boys, right? 3-4 girls, right? Per family. The numbers actually work out. So the only thing left is Levi. So how do you solve Levi? So again, either you go like Shaddal and assume there's skip generations, right? 17. I put it, to our view, the tribe of Levi was exceptional as much smaller numbers of generations. The reason for its limited population may have been their custom of marrying late. So one possibility is, yeah, maybe they really all got married really late. Right? Or because, as Prophet and Torah scholars, they separate themselves from their wives and numbered only 4 generations. So one possibility to say what Shaddal says is that there's a skip generation, or don't say there's a skip generation and say that Levi is really the outlier and Levi really only has, but that also explains why they have such small numbers by the time you get to the end, right? Now, he still assumes that there's more Levium around, right, which solves the problem that Shaddal had, right? Shaddal said, how do you get from 4 people to 8,600? That implies each child has 2,150 people. That's impossible, but Rav Medan just solves it by saying, no, we only list the important families. Maybe there are other people around. If there are other people around, it's not as crazy, even if there's only 4 generations, right? And the truth is that Levi's numbers are much smaller, so you don't have to do as much mathematical gymnastics, acrobatics. So, taking it together, what you get is 2, I think, actually much more simple solutions of how do we get from 70 to 2 million, right? One is to say that really it was 210 years, as Chazal assume, but recognizing Divrei Hayamim, say that the average family, the average Shevet had more like 7, 8, 9, 10 generations, and 10 generation, that's assumption 1. Assumption 2 is that Torah doesn't list all people in Chumash, it only lists the important people. And once you assume that it's only listing the important people, then you don't have to limit yourself to the people listed in Chumash. And then you just say, well, how many generations does it take to get from 70 to 2 million if each of them have about 5 to 6 kids? And the answer is, in 10 generations, you can easily get to 2 million. That's what the numbers lead you to. And in fact, that's what Chumash indicates. Rav Medan just says, yeah, they were there for 210 years, but it was more like 10 generations. And if it was 10 generations, and you didn't count all the people to begin with, so you're not talking 60, right? You're talking a few hundred people first generation. It's a few hundred to 2 million in 10 generations. Okay, the math works out. Shaddal does a similar calculation, right? The only thing that he changes is that he says, why go 210? take what Chumash itself says and say they were there for 430 years. 430 years makes it very easy to understand how you have 10 generations. The only problem Shaddal has that Rav Migdan doesn't have is that Levi is four generations. And you can understand how theoretically four generations is 210 years. It can happen if people get married very, very late, right? But you could never get to 430 because we know their lives. Their lives don't only add up to 350. So to that, Shaddal says, no problem. We know that from Chagai to Divrei Hayamim, sometimes we skip generations. We only mention the important generations. Therefore, he said, yeah, Levi also, you skip the important generations. How did you skip them? Every time a tribe would subdivide and start dividing, defining themselves as an independent community, so we named that generation. And there were basically three epics. Right? There were three periods of time in the Levite family. There was when they still defined just as Levi writ large, then they defined as Kahat, then they defined as Amram, and then eventually they had Moshe. That period, right, took 400 something years, but there were in fact other people in between. They just never subdivided into it. But what both Rav Meidan and Shaddal have in common is that they challenge our whole assumption that we're talking here four generations of 70 people. Right, Rav Meidan assumes, no, it's about 10 generations of more than 70 people, a few hundred people who just aren't listed, and the math works out. And Shaddal says it's 10 generations of 430 people with some skip generations. And again, either way, the number actually is pretty plausible. Now, while neither of these Pshatim are, let's say, the classic commentaries, they do a lot less violence to the Torah with solving the numbers than a lot of the others, because Rav Shaddal, while it goes against the Midrash, follows, you know, a pasuk in the Torah, right, which says we were there for 430 years. And Rav Meidan, right, the only thing he really has to do is assume that we don't list every person, which we know we don't always list every person. His proof from Reuven and Shimon, but both of them assume there were more people than you think, there was more generations than you think, and therefore the math, right, works out pretty smoothly. So I felt I had to share this because it really is actually much better. It's, you know, it's, you have to get into the nitty-gritty, but when you actually work it out, right, it actually isn't as crazy as it seems the first time around. All you have to do is make a few tweaks in the assumptions. The last thing I'll note, though, is the one thing it doesn't solve, right, is the secondary problems, right? It solves how we get from the 70 people to the 2 million. It doesn't solve all the problems of, doesn't the Torah sometimes seem to imply that there aren't 2 million people around? That problem you can't solve if you assume there are actually 2 million people, right? And so I actually had emailed this week Hill Nevesky, who runs the Al HaTorah, Rabbi Hill Nevesky, who runs the Al HaTorah website, because I figured I might as well, once I've done the work, they don't have an entry on it, so I'll just enter, you know, the sources. You can look at the website, it's fun, it's, everything is very, very, very organized. So we were talking about it, and he said, you know, if I wanted to, I should really ask, you know, like, have a correspondence with, like, leading Tanakh scholars and see. Okay, Rav Meidan wrote the first half of the article. He explained the numbers in an actually pretty easy to understand way, which is not too miraculous, pretty rational. But the second half of the problem isn't solved yet. So he's like, you'll do a great service to Klal Yisrael if you can get some good answers on that. If I get it, then I'll share you. I don't have the time right now to do all this correspondence. Maybe one day I will, in which case, you know, I can finish the second half of the shir. But in the meantime, okay, so next week we'll do what I actually had planned for this week, which is the end of the Parashat Bamidbar, but